I'm Laura Harper Lake.
And I'm Sarah Reitzman, and you're listening to Creative Guts.
Hello, dear listeners. Thanks for tuning in to Creative Guts.
We're so excited today because we are talking to a guest who explodes with style, vision, and gosh darn coolness. Today, we're talking with someone whose name you've heard before if you're a longtime listener of Creative Guts. Emmett Soldati.
The famous Emmett Soldati is the owner of the Teetotaler in Somersworth, New Hampshire, and coming soon to Concord, too.
It's nearly impossible to sum up Emmett in a sentence or two, so let's just jump right into this episode of Creative Guts with Emmett Soldati. Hi, Emmett. Welcome.
Hi. Welcome. And yes, thank you. Howdy.
We're really excited to have you on Creative Guts.
I'm very excited to be here. You're one of the emotions.
You're a bit of a local celebrity, which you probably know, but you have been mentioned on this podcast
more than once.
At least a handful of guests.
Mm-hmm. How big of a handful?
A large man's hand. Full.
Was it a large man that mentioned my name?
It was.
Okay. Maybe. Okay. Next question.
We have some callback questions for you toward the end of the episode. We want you to respond to what some other guests have said about you. They are not always nice, but...
Oh my God. I've always wanted to do mean tweets. I'm so happy.
All right. So let's get started, obviously, talking about... opening Teetotaler, which both took a lot of creativity and guts. And I've sort of heard this story a bunch of times, but I love hearing it. So it's okay that I have to hear it again.
So does that mean I have to tell it the same way?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I will notice every different detail. Okay. So let's start with how Teetotaler came to be and how it evolved over the past several years.
So Teetotaler came to be, I'll take you back to 2010. Was living in London. I was living abroad and I was a tea drinker. And... I also was recently sober. I had given up drinking alcohol. That was an activity that I started at a very young age, and it's something that I gave up at a very young age for a lot of different reasons. And a teetotaler, in its sort of original description, is someone that doesn't drink. So I had always identified as a teetotaler, and I was also a tea drinker. And I was like, wouldn't it be funny if we had a cafe that was called Teetotaler, and it was a pun? And I was, you know, a student in grad school, and I thought that was so clever.
I think it is. I love that.
You are so kind. But this was 2010. It wasn't clever, but it was enough of an idea that got me like, oh, that could happen. And so I found myself back in Somersworth, New Hampshire. I moved from London, England to Somersworth, New Hampshire. And I ran for city council. I was like, I love my town. Like, I love my city. I want to get involved with the downtown, you know, bold new leadership, create some change. And I lost to the incumbent. So I was like, okay, I lost this city council race. But I like kind of had like told all these people I was committed to the city and I was here and I was, you know, living in Somersworth, the smallest city in the state. And I did still like really care about this community that I had been part of my entire childhood. And so this idea, this like a teetotaler thing came up. I was like, well, why don't I open a tea cafe called Teetotaler in the smallest city in the state? And so I had lots of student loan debt.
Age were you at?
I would have been 22. At the time.
Wow. An experienced business person.
I had a lemonade stand. I had had a lemonade stand growing up. Famously made $16 a day on the corner of Washington and Maine.
Damn.
For probably a total of 6 days in an entire summer.
With inflation, that's a ton of money.
So you took that money and rolled it into the teetotaler.
Yeah, I paid Sally Mae with it. So I had all this debt. So I was like, I went to a school that is known for its business and finance programs, and I didn't to any of those programs. I have like an anthropology cultural studies degree, but I didn't tell people that. I was like, I went to the London School of Economics. And so people kind of had this expectation that like I knew what a pro forma was and spreadsheets and a business plan and how to get financing. And I didn't know any of that stuff. This was right when Kickstarter had just become on the scene. And we were all like, wow, the internet just provides free money through this thing called crowdsourcing. So I like made a little stupid video that you can still find on the internet. And I launched this Kickstarter to like... port the vision of Teetotaler. It was so embarrassing. And
we'll be digging it up. Don't worry.
Yes,
you're absolutely. Really, you're,
you know, I've said to people before, like, there's this embarrassing video on the internet, but I now know that you guys are going to literally put it with this. I should have been more careful. So I raised $8,000. That was a lot of money for me. I, you know, had like never really had a job before, but that was like no money when it comes to restaurants. It's like you buy three pieces of equipment and the money's gone. And that is kind of what happened. I like spent all my money getting this cafe open. And I remember like checking my bank account like 2 days before the cafe opened and there was like $60 in there. And it was like, oh, okay. Well, I mean, that's normal. That's fine. Like I'm going to open and like, I'm going to just be flooded with people because everyone else has been preoccupied with Teetotaler just like I have for 4 months. And so I open and literally two people show up the first day and then one person thought we were a furniture store. We did have, I mean, like we had like nice-ish furniture. So like I could see that. They didn't buy anything anyways. Like they didn't
buy.
Did
you offer them some furniture?
They didn't buy a coffee and or tea and they didn't buy the furniture. Like I would have sold them a chair to make ends meet. And like that was just like the slog. Like I just started, you know, kind of grueling through that process. And I will say like, and we'll come full circle hopefully. Like I love Teetotaler. It's an amazing life mission now. It was miserable. I was so lonely. I was so depressed. I felt like I had made a decision that trapped me for the rest of my life. And I had no way out. And I had so much pride in it that like I couldn't have imagined changing course or doing something different or closing it or whatever. But it was just like, I'm going to wake up every day at like 5 a.m. and go and like bake all these scones. And I'm not going to sell any of them, but I have to do that because I have a cafe. And just like working incredibly long hours, not then knowing how to pay my bills when they rolled in. I actually like went on food stamps for an early part because I couldn't even buy groceries at home. I couldn't pay rent. And I will say like, I don't often like talk about how amazing government programs are. That program saved my life. Like I would not be who I am today. I would not have the business I have today. And I don't think I would have been able to survive doing something that I valued without that transitional period of support. Because we're talking about a small city with a small market with selling a product and a space that was not at the time popular. And the thing that people see and love about Teetotaler now could not have existed if it didn't go through this very long period of just sort of quiet and struggle. And so again, like food stamps totally made that possible for me, along with like a lot of other support and a community that did respond. And so Teetotaler ultimately was modestly successful and did, you know, happen and grow. And eventually we were approached by a developer to move the cafe into a bigger space in sort of the heart of downtown. It was kind of off the beaten path for a little while. And that was an opportunity, kind of like a gestation period for me to like actually kind of incubate all the things I had learned having this little cafe, all the mistakes that I had made to kind of hit reset and envision like what I wanted Teetotaler to be. Up until that point, like there was this presumption of like, well, businesses are sort of like corporate and they're very sanitized and they appeal to potentially anybody and they have no values, they're valueless and they just sell a good or a commodity. And meanwhile, like Emmett Soldati, like, yeah, I haven't worn the same two socks that matched my entire life. Like everything I do has been sort of colorful and flamboyant and eccentric and weird. And I was like, well, why isn't Teetotaler as queer as the lifestyle and the space that I take up on my own way? So new Teetotaler that opened about 4 years ago kind of leaned in, as we say, to sort of those values and those ideas and those colors, which then I think led to us being a lot more socially conscious about like actively supporting, promoting, celebrating, and engaging in as a queer space and as an LGBTQ space, which is a sort of a social thing to say, and now it's a political statement. And that has like totally been part of our brand, and it's been part of the success of our brand is having a queer, not just queer owned, but a queer identified space in Somersworth, New Hampshire. And it turned out that I have done better in business by being that than just being this kind of quieter, dustier, rough around the edges little cafe.
Yeah. So now you're opening up a location in Concord. Do you anticipate the Concord location having sort of the same thing, or is it going to become its own sort of Concord Teetotaler because Somersworth and Concord are different and Somersworth, you know, the rainbow city? And
I think the thing that makes Teetotaler so wonderful and exciting and interesting for a lot of people, and the thing that people tell me that like it's a reason that they want to have a family in the area or they want to stay in the area and so forth, that is not just Somersworth. And I think what Teetotaler helped do in Somersworth was wake up a lot of people to the fact that a lot of their neighbors share the same values with them. Like, you know, we put up this billboard of this you know, young at the time, someone that identified as a boy, but very flamboyant and campy and silly. And it was just sort of this very campy queer advertisement, and the city loved it. They were like, oh my gosh, this is like so funny and silly and campy. And you wouldn't know that like your neighbors have the same sense of humor as you or the same values as you unless you have a joke that you both laugh at. And so Teetotaler has always been about being that visibility for the community to recognize itself. And so certainly I think we'll learn about Concord and like what Concord's quote unquote values are. But I think there's a little bit more of a universalizing feeling in New Hampshire and quiet spaces in general, that there's this presumption of provincial attitudes and conservativeness that is truly a presumption. It's a perception because there haven't been shared experiences for communities to say, oh, we do have the same sense of humor, or we do have the same pains, or we do have the same experiences from childhood or whatnot. And so I think Concord, though we of course will adapt and work with on the ground people and partnerships and organizations, I think Concord will have in its own sort of little way a similar opportunity to connect those values.
And I feel like a huge part of what draws people in just the visual aspect is your branding and your marketing, which you were just speaking about your marketing. I am in love with your typography on your logo and your whole vibe in general. I think it has a very creative flow. Is that a collaboration that you did with others artistically, or, you know, how did that brand evolve?
Yeah, I certainly think if you look up at that embarrassing video that I know you're going to dig up, you're going to see some of our old branding style stuff. And that's like 100% from Emmett's head. And it's like, okay, we need to like put that under lock and key. And I think what happened was, and this is again, like where Teetotaler has been the greater than the sum of its parts, but it's been built by the people that have worked there and been part of it. So had this vision or idea that Teetotaler had like a more whimsical logo and feel, and it had this sort of like kind of 80s camp, but also crisp and modern. And so I actually had like one friend of mine that was an artist that like drew the word Teetotaler, and then another friend kind of interpreted that and went beyond, and then, you know, I finally, you know, went into Adobe Illustrator and was like, print. So I take all the credit for it. All right, like trace outlines. Oh my gosh, it's beautiful. That's like an Adobe joke that like six people will get, I guess. So it was definitely like me finally recognizing what I wanted Teetotaler to be, but like there is no way by which I claim to be Teetotaler. And, you know, and similar is true about like our programming, and like when people talk about us being LGBTQ, not just friendly, but sort of active in the LGBTQ spaces, that was led by my employees. Like that was led by one of my, you know, first general managers. She was a trans woman that was an amazing general manager from food service management perspective. And she was also like, oh, there's totally an opportunity here to like celebrate and raise the voices of the trans community in the greater Somersworth area. Emmett Soldati's participation, that was just like to kind of let it happen and welcome it and embrace it. And so then Teetotaler now becomes the space that like has it as part of its sort of repertoire or track record being sort of in active pursuit of the value of supporting your neighbors regardless of gender identity and celebrating people that have transitioned or explored gender identity. You know, all the campy, silly billboards that I think gave us some national attention for being this queer, campy business, I wasn't the model. Though some people sometimes say like, oh, was that you? no, but like that was Kim Cummings. Like that was someone that I knew when they were in middle school buying taro bubble teas, you know, from my cafe. Like, so like they helped imbue a level and gave that sort of status of the pink, the flamboyant, the queer. And it was like one of my, you know, baristas that came up, coined the term Chai Curious, which we have just totally capitalized on. You know, we pay him well for it. I'm sure he'll, when we sell or something, I don't know, he'll get the dividend. But yeah, I think in so many ways, like Teetotaler has just been this conduit to welcome these voices and these perspectives. And that extends from like the creative, artistic, flamboyant expression of the like we sort of have this, like people call it a rainbow wall or like this sort of mural wall has landed in a lot of publications and our furniture and the names of our breakfast sandwiches. All these things have been a collection of a lot of really wonderful people.
Yeah. Yeah. The menu itself is a work of art. I just want to name a few that I pulled out. The steamy, dreamy, creamy.
So, okay, that was literally, a customer could not remember for whatever reason. We had a particular hot cocoa that was not made the way most hot cocos are made. It was we made this dark chocolate fudge base, and then we just poured foamed milk over it. So it was like a latte, but instead of espresso, you used sort of this dark chocolate concentrate. And we had some name for it, dark chocolate hot cocoa or something. And she couldn't remember it. So she's just like, whatever that steamy, dreamy, creamy thing is. And we're like, that's it. That's the name.
Along with that, we have the Jessica Rabbit, the prophetic popcorn, and the Jonathan Siegel.
Oh, that is literally, and I guess I'm tooting my own horn, the best breakfast sandwich in New England. I promise you. I promise. I'm there's nothing I am more proud of than that breakfast sandwich.
The Jonathan Siegel?
The Jonathan Livingston Siegel. We're going to talk about Dijon aioli. This is a homemade sourdough English muffin, a baked egg, North Country Smokehouse bacon. I'm telling you, that is the best breakfast sandwich you will ever have.
I'd really like to ask you this question in a more eloquent, wonderful way, but can you cook? Did you make the things on your menu?
That was not eloquent at all. No, we buy it all frozen at the Walmart frozen section, and we heat it up. Yes, I can cook. Yeah, I mean, I think in some ways, my background, even when I had a lemonade stand, is I was always in the kitchen. I was a foodie. Honestly, a lot of times when I talk about Teetotaler for whatever reason, or I'm giving a talk, or I'm talking about entrepreneurship, and people talk about the marketing and the design, it's wait, what about the food? I only am here. I used to be a sourdough bread baker. I have spent my life in kitchens. I think if you're a townie, if you live in Somersworth, you know the Jonathan Siegel. People come because they love our coffee. They think we have the best coffee in New Hampshire. People are like, teen drag queens. I'm like, but try the breakfast sandwiches. So, in some ways, it's the biggest struggle for me is we do so much on the food side. I used to run a farm to table restaurant, and you learn a lot just about where your food comes from and how to prepare good food and how to price it, because it's very expensive and people don't like paying for the price of food. So a lot of the things I've learned as a restaurant owner over the last several years goes into why we are obsessive about scratch cooking. We do everything. We make all our own syrups. We make all our own aiolis. We make the tahini that goes into the hummus that we make. It's just, and yet we don't talk about this because people want to know about the teen drag shows.
Yeah.
So it's always we make the, vegan waffles, and we, all the baked goods, we laminate the pastries. We don't just buy puff pastry and fold it around, apples to make an apple turnover. We laminate the butter into the doughs that we make. And it's hard to kind of share and promote that, but I am a foodie. I am only happy when I'm cooking for other people. I don't like cooking for myself, but I love cooking for other people.
Yeah, I think we might probably take the food being so good for granted because the space is so sort of unusual, and you've created a space that just doesn't exist anywhere else that I know of. But the food is really, really good.
Oh, thank you. It paid off.
Sometimes I forget you have food, but
a lot of people do too. They'll be there for some shows and stuff, and they'll come for weeks and weeks and weeks, and then it's like, is that toast? Of course we have toast. Who doesn't have toast?
No, I'm sorry. We all just came to take a picture of the wall for our Instagrams.
Yeah, there's definitely this group of people that will come in with their, I wasn't going to name the company of cup that they bring in, but they're they'll come in with their pumpkin spice latte from another business and
oh my gosh,
their pizza. And they're like, can we take photos? And I'm like, of course you can take photos. I mean, we do also sell all those things you're eating, but yes, enjoy the photos.
They're missing out. They're missing out.
Just make sure to tag us.
Yeah. No, really though, you've created a space that feels different than other spaces. And I've had the pleasure of being there just to get coffee, but I've also had the pleasure of being there for sort of professional gatherings. I've been there for work, and I've also been there to see presidential candidates speak. And it's such an interesting backdrop for those things. So say in Leadership Seacoast, I could be in a boring white conference room in the McConnell Center in Dover, or we can be in Teetotaler, and it's just sort of a world of difference just being surrounded by something that feels really coming up with adjectives that don't sound stupid. I was going to say innovative. Innovative sounds dumb.
Disruptive.
It feels warm and welcoming and colorful and happy. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's different, and it's different in a way that is way, way, way better. it's been kind of cool to see presidential candidates come mm-hmm. and speak about politics in front of, like, you know, the cool pink dresser and whatever the pictures come out of it. What has that been like to have that space be used for that?
It's been wonderful. I mean, I think we've had 14 presidential candidates
it's crazy.
Come to our space. Wow. And
it's crazy that that's not all of them.
Yeah. it's been very interesting. I mean, that's sort of an intersection of my, like, kind of political activities and my business activities.
Yeah.
And so many people, because I am very politically active, especially like in local politics and like city councils and stuff. And so many people want to know, like, well, who do you support? Like, what do you think? And it's like, are you kidding me? Like, if there are 50 people in Teetotaler, all I am worried about is, like, is the smoke alarm going to go off? And, like, is everyone's chai latte order going to be remembered? Like, I don't have time to remember, like, what Beto O'Rourke or Kirsten Gillibrand, like, said in some thing. I was like, I'll catch it later on C-SPAN. I'm so nervous. I am, like, you know, there's just, like, all this, there's press, and then there's, like, the campaign people, which is sometimes half of the audience. They just, like, bring 30 people. And then there's, like, friends and, like, people from the community and so forth. And I mean, it's very wonderful. Like, I do love it, because for me, what it means is, for the first time that I can remember, people saw Somersworth and a city like Somersworth as having political currency.
Yeah.
And they'll do these events everywhere, no matter what.
Yeah.
And it means something to me that my community gets to have a front row seat and my community gets to ask a question if they so choose. And for all that we talk about, like, first in the nation and, oh, New Hampshire voters, it's never been like that for me growing up. Like, yeah, like, my parents would bring me down to Portsmouth or maybe to Concord. We weren't sitting down in a space where I'm, like, as close as I am to you, talking to, you know, Pete Buttigieg or talking to Kamala Harris, you know, like, that. Yeah, it is special for Somersworth, and it's so meaningful to have been part of a story that shows a different side of New Hampshire, of our towns, of, like, what matters. You know, in some ways, that's had real ramifications. I mean, I can remember all these Politico arguments about Kirsten Gillibrand supporting an X marker for non-binary people on their, like, identifications, like a non-gendered identification. That was a question asked by some, you know, Polana Belkin, who used to work at Teetotaler, 2 feet away from Kirsten Gillibrand, from the senator. Maybe that would have happened somewhere else. Maybe it could have happened somewhere else, but it did happen in Somersworth, and it happened for people that lived there. And that's what's been super special about it. Individual candidates, people always ask, like, who do you like? Who do you support? Blah, blah, blah. Like, I have values, I have policies I like and so forth, but it's so much more special to me that, like, the folks that surround me have this access.
Yeah.
Because they've never had it before.
Have you heard any feedback from the candidate themselves or, like, campaign staff who walk in and are sort of like, oh, this is where I'm speaking tonight?
They use a different tone. They say, oh, this is so cute, like avocado toast, great. You know, there's, I mean, I definitely feel, not every campaign, but it's definitely like a city mouse, country mouse experience when, like, especially like some staffers where it's like, have you ever been to a place with, like, less than a million people in it? Like, my most favorite thing is, like, whenever they, like, approach, like, the tea wall, they're like, well, do you know that chai actually means tea? And it's like, yeah, I own a cafe. Like, thank you for your, like, Brooklyn knowledge on where the word chai comes from. So, yeah, like, no, they think it's, like, I think it's cute. It's fun. You know, WMUR did this whole piece about, we have this diner called Roby's Country Store in New Hampshire, more conservative leaning. And I think every presidential candidate has been to Roby's Country Store, a lot more Republican races. We've never, you know, had a Democratic race this big. And WMUR said, like, Teetotaler has replaced Roby's Country Store as, like, ooh, the political stopover. And that's kind of impressive because we've never had a presidential candidate until 8 months ago. And to suddenly then, like, that's how quickly we can sort of change the paradigm and change the spaces that allegedly or ostensibly matter in this state. And that's been kind of an exciting to think about because, you know, if you talk to anyone in the Seacoast, like, yeah, they know Teetotaler, maybe they've been, maybe they haven't, but, like, they've heard of it, like, great. But you tell someone in politics, like, oh, everybody goes to Teetotaler. It's like, we need to book, we need to get there right now. Like, when's our, you know, thing? It's like, oh, okay, that's how it works.
And how did it start? Who was the first and how did, like, was it someone who knew someone who was like, you got to go here?
Okay, this is, I'm, like, spilling the tea. This is, like, I'm on the View, right? Oh my gosh.
do you not say that all the time?
No, I do say it all the time, but Oh, we're just going to depart from that and move on and not acknowledge it. What were we talking about? So it's interesting because I think this is like another sort of case study in like building the world you want to live in. I saw an opportunity a year ago, like, oh, like all these people are coming through the state of New Hampshire. Like, that's going to be great. Wouldn't it be great if we could tap into that a little bit, you know, make use of that and so forth. And I feel like I just told people like, oh, Teetotaler is going to have presidential candidates. No presidential candidate had ever come before, but I still said it. I remember Julian Castro, he had just announced and it was home in Texas and then like went to Puerto Rico and then was like direct to New Hampshire. And like a friend of a friend was like managing or starting to manage his state campaign. And we're like, we don't know.
I totally know who you're talking about.
Who shall remain nameless. There was like, we need somewhere to go. And like someone had just sort of said like, oh, Emmett has this space. Because I think a big part of it is if you don't have a view into the landscape of New Hampshire, you just don't know like physically where to go, mm-hmm. where people can congregate, where you'll run into trouble. And so just having a little bit of a like a 2 degrees of separation, like, oh, check out Teetotaler. Like, you've been there before. You can go. They're like, cool. Let's just book this little tiny quick little, you know, a Teetotaler. And then we'll like have our actual itinerary, official New Hampshire itinerary. And so we were like, cool. Put it on the airwaves. Like, Julian Castro coming to Teetotaler, like 48 hours notice. We're packed. Like so many people showed up. I shouldn't say how many because I know that like the fire marshal listens to this show.
It was a lot
of people, but all of the entrances and exits were clearly marked and we turned off all of the equipment. Again, this is like what I think of when I'm running an event. I'm just like nervous, like, oh, the code enforcement officer's gonna show up and shut us all down, and like that's gonna be the article that gets posted in Politico. So I wasn't listening at all to the person speaking. But no, so Julian Castro did this event. A lot of people showed up and people were kind of like shocked. First of all, what weird space am I in? And like, is that really Julian Castro? And like, is he really talking about running for president? And like, it was just like kind of a daze. And like, and there were TV, there was like camera crews and like TV crews and all this stuff. And it just like felt kind of wild. And I remember like my mom asked him a question about like pardoning Trump. And like, he had like a, you know, an interesting answer, great answer. And like that answer ended up getting picked up in the national media. And it was suddenly like, just like, you know, the power that has, the international implications that has, that's an Anna Navarro quote that nobody got, but I'm a big View watcher now. That's another Teetotaler thing that's happened. No, so it just like, it was like kind of awe-inspiring. And from there, you know, I got to introduce some of the candidates when they come or other people from Teetotaler would. And we got to tell our story. We got to be like, you are in Somersworth, New Hampshire. You're in the Rainbow City. You're in the gayest city in the state of New Hampshire. And of course, you have like all of these metropolitan staffers and a senator, congressperson, whatever, being like, what? Like, did you just say gay? Like, did you say that out loud? And we're like, and everyone's clapping like Rainbow City, Rainbow. And it's just like, I think some of these candidates have to just sort of be like, what happened to New Hampshire? We started to get from definitely the campaign staff level, like, oh, okay, there's like some credibility in Somersworth. Like, you got this sort of like blue collar queerness going on, and that's like really hip right now. And we just tapped into it. We just kind of were like, yeah, that is what we are. Sure. And then, like, you know, for example, Pete Buttigieg opened an office in Somersworth. And I can't remember for the life of me, and your listeners will correct me, I'm sure, on Twitter. I don't remember a time a primary candidate opened an office in Somersworth. I mean, we almost never have a candidate in the general open an office in Somersworth, let alone a primary as crowded as this.
Yeah.
And so that, I think, was part of that narrative of and they told us this, like, Somersworth represents, you know, that for that particular person's campaign, represents part of this ethos of like bringing more people into the conversation and this concept of belonging as being sort of a thread through their campaign and how Somersworth's story matches that. And so it was one of those things that I think maybe no one just made the case for Somersworth before, and Teetotaler was a good conduit to do that. And that's really how it happened.
That's so beautiful. I was also very impressed that evening that I got my latte. So it was like a billion people in Teetotaler. And I was like, that latte's gone. There's no way that they are going to find me and I am going to find it. But I did. I drank my damn latte.
Oh my gosh. That is all I care about. That makes me feel so good. Like, okay, as a business owner, like, that's what I needed to happen. Like, I don't care if the sound system doesn't work. I don't care if they don't remember their lines. Like, you got your latte.
So we mentioned earlier that there have been some references to you in earlier episodes of this podcast. So we wanted to give you an opportunity, should you choose to respond.
Is this question six?
Yes, it is.
That's different from rapid fire. I thought this was going to be rapid, like,
not yet.
Hates you, likes you. Thinks you have terrible dance moves. We're going to talk.
So first, you have to set a little debate for us. God. Are you the Matt Wyatt of Summersworth, or is Matt the Emmett of Rochester?
Listen, whoever smelt it, dealt it. So for him to even bring up this little tit-for-tat thing means, like, he's the one that's thinking, oh... No, I'm just kidding. I am there. I don't know. Is it a seniority thing? Is it a what you're doing thing? I love Rochester. I super, super love Rochester. I was born at Frisbee Memorial Hospital. We don't have any hospitals in Summersworth. And I'm very proud of Rochester. I think, and I'm not ashamed to say this, like, I think Rochester has way better bones than Summersworth. Like, it has this beautiful downtown. It was not as devastated by urban renewal that Summersworth was. So I think in a lot of ways, Summersworth's kind of grit and its attitude and its community is, like, a little less evident and visible in its downtown, because we just have, like, a lot of vacant parking lots. So I love Rochester, and I love anyone that loves Rochester.
So in a more recent episode, we had another guest name drop you. Sarah Duclos took credit for the success of the Teetotaler, which we assume is correct.
Wait. Is that a yes or no? She took credit for the success of all.
She also took credit for Laura's marriage. So, like,
listen, take it, honey, Sarah, if you're listening, baby. No, like, again, I think teetotaler. I think I talked about that kind of dark period of, like, sadness and depression and loneliness. Teetotaler survived and thrived because I started to have people that surrounded me that made me feel like I wasn't making the worst decision of my life. Sarah was definitely one of those people that early days, it's like, oh, just someone with energy and someone with color and someone with a spark, like, and like this willingness to be like, let's do something weird. Let's do something wild. Let's experiment. And that to me, and Sarah was big in the early days. She gets, like, the OG cred for, like, enjoying a slice of lemon polenta cake and, you know, a chai latte at old dusty Teetotaler and hanging out and wanting to do things there and, yeah, like, wanting to do, like, pop-up dance events. And so, like, Sarah and others in the early days, it was totally like, yeah, it would not exist. Teetotaler would not exist. I, like, discovered this weird fascination of Kate Bush in my late 20s. I was a late comer to Kate Bush. And I fell in love with Kate Bush. And I was like, Sarah, we need to do this flash mob thing where we all wear red dresses and dance to Wuthering Heights, you know, 1979 Billboard hit. And she's like, okay. She's like, and I choreographed it. Okay. And we did. And now we're in, like, I don't know, our fifth annual Kate Bush flash mob Wuthering Heights day in Summersworth. And we have, like, I think we had almost a dozen dancers and a huge audience.
When is it?
It's whatever the weekend, like around July 15th is. And it is awesome. So cool. It is.
Creative Guts should go.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Creative
we'll
Guts should go. Yeah. Yes.
We'll be there.
Plug it now. Yeah. July, whatever.
Official. You heard it here first.
Just
July,
show up,
whatever.
July, whatever. Just show up in red. Everyone, we teach everyone the dance. We, like, take over the streets a little
so
bit.
Fun.
It's
yeah.
so fun. I mean, I've had people come from Vermont, people come up from Boston, and it's just like, this is all I wanted when I lived in London, or I used to live in Toronto. And it's so nice to be like, I have it here.
You made the community. Mm-hmm. That
That's
you
really
wanted.
Sweet.
Yeah.
And we have a very loving relationship with Sarah Duclos. She is one of our biggest fans, mm-hmm. and we adore her. So
she's listening right now.
She's definitely listening.
Right this second. Right hey, Sarah.
Hi, Sarah. So back in episode 17, Matt Wyatt also invited you into his bedroom for some lovemaking. And I think that we're just going to skip that and go right to rapid fire. What do you think?
I was like, in his bedroom, is there art in there? Is there?
Yeah. He might say yes.
Oh, okay. Hi, Matt. Oh, he'll get a text from me later.
Making connections on Creative Guts.
Yep, rapid fire.
Rapid fire.
Rapid fire.
What's your favorite thing on Teetotaler's menu?
We have this thing that... Wait, but I don't want to say it because I'm going to have to like answer it in caveat. So we have this like little cookie bar. It's like a little vegan, and it's gluten-free actually, and it's like a little Twix. We call it our Boy Scout bar because it was like, we had this like Boy Scout, true Boy Scout, you know, 17, 18-year-old kid. I've already taken too long. There's like this little cookie bar, and it's very good, and everyone loves it, and everyone gives a shit for being, why is it called a Boy Scout bar? But, you know, Go Scouts.
Does it have coconut on it?
Yes, there's coconut in it.
Okay, I'll be there tomorrow. Who in your life has influenced you the most?
Can I do like my parents together?
Totally.
That's so dumb. But like they would be so upset if I didn't say that. They'd be like, oh, we didn't get a shout out. No, like my mama is just like an endless amount of support and love and creativity. And my dad is like a lawyer that like raised me to be very like litigious and defend myself and like sue any corporation that crosses me. So yeah, that's who.
That's awesome. Do you have any creative hobbies? I mean, you're creative in your enterprise and your work.
I love crafting a good email. I'm serious.
<too. laughs>
Like, if I could just never cook anymore, if I could never dance anymore, like, close it all down, put me in a room to write some good emails. And I am in my element, and it will show. Like, you will receive that email, and you'll be impressed.
Will you please send me an email, like, maybe tomorrow?
I mean,
I just,
yeah.
Like, wanna,
give me
I
a
wanna
prompt.
Read a... an Emmett email.
You should send an email to Creative Guts reviewing how we did.
Oh,
as
I love
an
it.
Interview.
I love
you
it.
Don't
it's
want to read
yours.
That email.
That's great.
Favorite selection of music you like to have on in your cafe?
Definitely, like me, I'm a pleaser when it comes to music, right? Like I'm not like, cause I'll listen to the same song over and over and over again, and it's Booty by J-Lo and Iggy Azalea. There's on repeat, doesn't matter. Actually right now it's Together Forever by Janet Jackson. That song is just like my jam. But we have a lot of Tori Amos. One of my friend of house managers loves Tori, so I'm always like, oh, let's put on some like Tori, and that'll get us a little Alanis, Dolly, like St. Vincent, like if we're going like modern, contemporary, a lot of St. Vincent.
So badass chick, yeah.
Yeah. And then like, you know, I'll listen to that like Christmas song by Mariah Carey on repeat.
What's your favorite color?
I can't reveal that. Are you kidding me? No, if I didn't say pink, everyone would be like, fraud. I'm like a pink and a blue. I mean, I love blue. Blue looks good. Blue likes me, if you know what I'm saying. Yeah. People are like, pink's your color. I'm like, that's just because I wear it. No, I like pink and I like blue.
Nice.
But I also like, to me, it's like, I like color. Like if people wear shades of gray, what are we doing with our time on earth here? What are we doing?
Favorite scent?
There's definitely like you know, like some shampoo that like it revisits me like every 6 years, and I'm like, someone's wearing that scent that like I remember, like I don't know, from high school, like someone had. That sounds like kind of creepy. Like I was like smelling someone, you know, like my high school girlfriend's hair, like, that's the smell. Any like, I don't eat a lot of baked goods, but like the smell of baked goods is so intoxicating. Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite sound?
Like, okay, actually, maybe I do have a favorite sound. You know, like in, I think it was probably like Planet of the Apes, where they have like these, in other apocalyptic worlds, where they have municipal sirens for the end of the world. And it's like,
My town
really good.
Of Newfields and the town of Raymond both have that. And I'm not joking. That's the volunteer firefighter alert system.
Oh, it is.
It really does that.
There is just like some movie, and it's not Planet of the Apes, but it's very similar to it. I think there's apes in it. And there's like a scene where that sound comes up. And I remember my childhood just being like, whoa, that's so cool that like the whole like land would be captivated by this noise.
Like the nuclear blast warning.
Yeah.
Favorite taste?
There is... This is so stupid. In Toronto, they have, on all the corner stores, they have this open bucket of gummy candies called Sour Keys, and they've all been sitting there for like months, and they're all stale, and there's nothing better than a stale Sour Key from Kensington Market in Toronto.
I love that answer.
I don't eat them at all. I mean, I don't live there anymore, and it's like I dream about Sour Keys, stale Sour Keys.
What is your favorite texture?
Does everyone say wool? Does everyone say wool? Because I don't want to say wool.
No one said wool. Someone, a few people have said cotton.
Yeah.
Ew, cotton kills.
Yeah, I don't particularly enjoy that.
Okay, cheese pizza. Oh my gosh.
What was your favorite texture? Have we done these questions?
We haven't asked that one of each other, I don't think.
Probably that thing at Walmart where they put this in the middle of the aisle. It's like a big metal crate, and there's all these pillows in the crate. And there's like one pillow that has that sequin effect where you go back and forth. And then there's the other pillow that's like so fluffy you feel like it's like a chinchilla, or it's just like non-existent. It's so fluffy. And like sticking both my hands into the pillow crate at Walmart between like the like Hallmark section and the kitchen appliance section is... And is a touch experience.
When you were building that up and you were like, in the center of Walmart and there's that big metal crate, all I thought of was the $5 DVDs. And that was
No.
You swim in the DVDs.
No. That is over between residential home furniture and electronics. That is not near the party and kitchen section.
How silly of me. Most inspiring location you've traveled to other than a Walmart.
Did you say inspiring?
Yeah.
I'm inspired. Like this location that I'm in just makes me feel like I can take on the world. I'm so inspired by it. What does that mean?
Are you mocking our question?
No. Like, did going that sound, to, was that like, a mocking tone?
Like, Sarah and I are both wicked into street art. And so someplace like Austin, Texas is very inspiring to us. Oh. Or, you know, something like that.
Do you remember who else gave us a really hard time during rapid fire questions?
Who?
Matt Wyatt.
Oh, wow.
He was like, what are these going to be printed in Teen Beat or something?
Yeah. Okay, well, Matt Wyatt is the Emmett Soldati of creative guts. maybe I just listened to his and I learned lessons. Do you guys have like stats on who's listened to whose shows more?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
I like who's most popular. Okay. We'll talk later. I have an advertising budget that I'm available to spend on this specific episode only. The most inspiring location. I am still having trouble understanding the question, so I'm going to talk a little bit about the time that... Okay, no, so this is true, and maybe now I know what you mean. So I had the fortunate opportunity to do a lot of traveling in my studies to Southern Africa, like South Africa, Botswana, Zambia, Zimbabwe, and have since returned there, actually, for work-related things. Weird tangent. And I remember I was like in Livingstone, Zambia, which is where we think of Dr. Livingstone, I presume, because he was like one of the, you know, white scientists that like kind of came in and participated in colonialism. But it's where Victoria Falls is. So a lot of people know about Victoria Falls. And I was like somewhere just like hanging out in the downtown streets of Livingstone. And like people were like literally playing foosball in the streets. And like it was just like this fun space to be in. It was very poor, but the people were very kind. And I was young and I was sort of, and I'm, you know, this little white boy from New Hampshire experiencing a place across the world. And someone, there was like some quote, some poet, I think like some Walt Whitman, like white poet or something, said something. There was about like, you know, once you see the sunrise in Africa, like blah, 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 like this sort of fantasy idea of treating all of Africa as one country. But I have to say, like being there, I'd felt like I sort of understood how broad the world is and how open the world is. And I felt like at peace. And I felt like there was so much about like being young and dumb and in grad school and like everything is an existential crisis and everything is whining and everything is like meaningless and you know it and you're still like writing dumb papers. And then I was like just in this space where like people were like living and trying to thrive and there was a brutality of poverty, but there was just something about that whole experience that truly changed my life. And it's a reason I work again in a couple of countries in the south of Africa. So yeah, that was like a moment in time where a space, a city that I was in was like, whoa, confronted me with humanity. That sounded like a really dumb answer.
No, but it was a good one. It was a good one.
Great answer for someone who didn't understand the question.
Yeah.
And Sarah has the last question for you tonight.
If you could go back in time, what advice would you give your younger self?
Dude, get the accountant.
Yeah.
100%. Like, really good advice. Like, you think that you can't afford it, you can't afford not having that accountant. It is gonna you in the ass. Oh my God. Like, wow. Really appreciating some financial literacy in business could have, you know, part of like, and people, when I talk to people about like owning a business and do it no matter what, like it's gonna help you, you're gonna learn everything. There is an element of like people that are too smart wouldn't start the kind of businesses that maybe end up being wonderful or important or valuable because they're smart to realize like how brutal and painful it is to do it. So I think if I had a little too much financial literacy, I never would have gotten into food service and restaurants and cafes. Food service is a miserable, terrible industry. And I don't pretend that it's not. If anything, I sort of try to transform what I'm doing away from forces of evil that is the restaurant business. But I think a little bit more financial literacy would have maybe like saved me a little bit of money in my 20s when I could have used it. So, yeah.
Thank you so much for being on the Creative Guts podcast, Emmett.
Is that where I am?
Oh, whoops.
Oh.
Uh-oh. So with that.
Show us your creative guts. Show us your creative guts. Kids Bop. Oh my gosh, this is so good.
Holy cow. I never tire of listening to the famous Emmett Saldati speak. Another huge thank you to Emmett for joining us on Creative Guts.
What a cool dude. I love that he created such a vibrant venue that sparked a movement in that part of the state. I love the aesthetic, and I appreciate his passion and drive to make New Hampshire a better place for every single person. Like, he really freaking believes it, and he puts his money where his mouth is by creating an awesome venue like that.
Indeed he does. Go visit the amazing Teetotaler in Somersworth and soon Concord. Please eat some of the food, because Emmett's concerned that you don't even know they have food. Get to know Emmett at teetotalerteahouse.com and on Facebook and Instagram. The handle is Teetotaler.
And you can check out these links and more on our Facebook page, facebook.com/creativegutspodcast and at Creative Guts Podcast now on Instagram. And of course, we will have a section for Emmett on our website, www.creativegutspodcast.com.
Thank you for tuning in, and we hope you're inspired now too. We'll be back next Monday with another episode of Creative Guts.
Emmett, if you're listening. So, like, okay, the time, the day is December 10th, and you are in a state of calm. You're on a precipice, right? And there's a lot going on, and there's a lot of decisions that you're going to need to make. But just beware of the number 8, okay? Okay, well, I'm going to have to go figure out this whole Hannaford to go situation. Listen, Hannaford, if you're listening, could you please extend my window of time till 8 p.m.? I know I said the 7 p.m. thing, but please?
Please, Hannaford.
Is this brought to you by Hannaford? Okay, hit the button.
Every time that I look up, I see you.
Creative Guts is sponsored by Hannaford.
And one Janet Jackson song.
And Janet Jackson. Oh.
If I'm there before 9, don't put the groceries back. I don't care if they get warm. I will take them and pay for them.
Oh, no, that's totally fine. There's other 8 o'clock orders too, so I'll just leave yours with those.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much.
No problem. Have a good night.
Bye. I'm sorry. Oh my god, I just got the chills.
All right, so we end every episode the same way.
With rapid questions. Okay, ready? My favorite taste is something salty. My favorite color is
gray.
Ombre.
And he wants it to make
dear.
Instead of or something like that.
No, it's the sound of tissue paper tearing. Oh, no, I just whistled. Sorry. I'm taking over your show now. I don't care about rapid fire.